Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Media Show. My name is Carl Madden and this is a show where we talk about the media, the films, TV shows, anything we can think of. And my cohort in this little project is Mr. Russ Cluett. How are you doing, sir?
You make it sound like we're doing something illegal. I'm very well. I got back from a gig at about 3 o'clock last night, so I'm very tired. But I'm ready to go. I'm good to go.
You're always gigging. You're a big gigger.
Well, actually, I spent about 2 hours last night playing in front of the bar staff. They clapped and appreciated it, so there we go.
Okay.
Played in a tiny little village off the M5, and apparently there was another party going on in the village. And they complained about the noise we were making. So
you wasn't the only party in the village?
No.
Okay. No. Joining us for a first time, her debut, so to speak, is Teresa Hummel. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Carl. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
My goodness. It's 9 a.m. in the morning here, so I'm going to blame anything ridiculous I say on the fact that I am not a morning person. Of course, this gives me a great out. See, if we'd done this later in the day, I couldn't say that. So there you go.
Well, that's the excuse I'm going to use.
There you go.
It's midday for us. And rounding out our panel, we have Alex back again. Alex G. Fox, how are you doing?
I'm all right. It's not 9 o'clock in the morning here, but I'm still going to use Teresa's excuse as mine as well.
I think it's a great excuse. It works really well, you know. Oh, I said something stupid. Sorry, I was really tired.
So it doesn't matter whether it's afternoon or morning. We're all completely knackered.
There you go. I like that. Right. It works.
Yeah. So the first story this week: Sky takes on web film rentals by offering a service that's £15 a month. Now they released this. I think it was on Tuesday. And they got in a bit of hot water straight away because on their advertising page, they say it's available for many, many different items, such as such as iPads and iPhones. And of course, the app hasn't been approved yet. So straight away, you sign up for a service, take on your 30 days trial, and you can't use it if you're only using it on an iPad or an iPhone. You can use it on the web page, however, but I think it's only offering around 600 movies to start off with. It's only SD films, not HD, and I think that probably means only in stereo as well, although I've been unable to confirm that.
At least it's not in mono.
Well, that is one plus. So there's two services. You can either go for the £15 a month straight fee, or you can buy films individually between 99p and £3.49. Now, okay, it's a new service. It's just getting off. They're saying it's going to compete with Love Film and Netflix. However, as I say, it only offers films at the moment. Has anyone had a chance to try this?
I tried to sign up for it earlier today because I thought I was going to have enough time before the show. And I went up for a start. I didn't know what it was called, so I had to ask you, Carl, what it was called. What's it called? Because I've forgotten already.
Now TV,
right. So I tried to sign up for it, and eventually I found it. I clicked on the 30-day free trial button, and then I had to create a Sky account. So now Mr. Murdoch has my details. And then after that, I had to go and purchase it. Now, it said a 30-day free trial, and it said it wanted £15. There wasn't a little thing that says 30-day free trial minus £15 on the little, you know, invoice. So I'm not gonna risk it, especially when you hear what Carl has to say about it.
Well, I'm assuming they're not taking my money yet. I mean, I won't know until I get my credit statement through. But live in hope. Alex, have you had a play yet, or did you have something similar a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I have. It's still probably current because of I didn't pay for it. I don't know what you call it. Sky, it's like Sky Television. But it's via the internet.
Not Sky Go, was it?
It might have been. But as soon as I get the opportunity, it'll be Sky Gone. Because it was rubbish. But the thing is, it's not the same as in with what I got. It just replicates the certain TV channels it has, and you can just watch them. I suppose there's a slight delay, but you just watch them via the internet as opposed to via your satellite dish. So it's slightly different, but looking at the cost of this thing, I think it's a really stupid thing they're doing. If they want to match Netflix and Love Film price-wise, I mean, Netflix is, what, £6-ish, and Love Film's about 10. Match them price-wise on...
Excuse me, Love Film's actually cheaper now if you just go for the streaming package. It's also okay. About £6, £7.
Oh, okay, because, yeah, then Love Film, you can have DVDs to the door as well, can't you? Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying, what I would have suggested if I were speaking to Murdoch these days would be match them in price, but then you can have a pay-per-view option for the blockbusters on top. But what they've done here, it's, you know, there's a pay-per-view option, but, you know, it's 99p for what I would consider Netflix-level films, and then £3.49 for blockbusters. I think it's over, you know, it is overpriced. And but the thing is, they are tied in financially more difficult to more difficulties because of, they've already paid for these films. They've already paid a premium price because of they've got them for their satellite provider service. So I don't know. I'm not sure why they're bothering to get involved in this unless it's something that they're going to give either free or a lot cheaper service to their already subscribed satellite people. Because that would make sense to me, because then you don't pay anything for the pay-per-view for, say, the lower level films, but you pay maybe £1 for the blockbusters, then it would work. But this as a price subscription is far too high.
Well, the reason they're charging such a premium price is because they're saying they've got movies much earlier than the other two services, which is true. I mean, they've currently got things like Captain America and Thor on there, for example, which over in the UK I don't think are available on Netflix or Love Film as yet, streaming anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, that's fine. But you've got two tiers, haven't you? I don't know if they call it A and B tier, but you've got the A tier, which is what you were talking about, the mm-hmm. blockbuster, but you've got your B tier, which Netflix and Love Film already have. So what I'm saying is, why they didn't match Netflix and Love Film with that, but offer the pay-per-view additional option for the blockbusters? I think this is just a slightly greedy, maybe they're just going to test the market. Because they've done this before when they've released hardware and various things. The subscriptions were a lot more. It's like when they first launch a new HD or they launch a new service, it's an additional £10 a month, £20 a month or whatever it happens to be. And then once they've got the people silly enough to pay that, all of a sudden it all becomes free for everyone that wants it. And so I feel maybe this is what they're going to do. It seems the way they do things, they chuck out a higher price because they know there's X amount of people daft enough to play it, and then they'll match Netflix with this subscription level. Mm-hmm. It seems the way they do all their business.
It's weird that they're not offering TV as well in with this package, because Netflix has been reporting that they're making massive download figures on their TV shows. But they are, Sky is saying they're going to introduce sport towards the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, they're just moving over what they've already got. Mm-hmm. They're moving over their Sky Go to, a pay-as-you-go service.
Teresa, do you've got any companies over there in the States that offer a service like this?
No, the closest we get, I mean, if through your cable company like Charter or Comcast or Time Warner or whoever, is the pay-per-view on television. And then a lot of, I think Comcast also has an iPad app, but I'm not sure because I don't have Comcast. So I have Charter, and Charter has far less services than Comcast does. But, I mean, I don't need it on a small screen. I'm not even going to watch an iPad for a movie or something. Certainly not an iPhone. I'm too old for that. My eyes don't work that well. I wouldn't even be able to see the damn iPhone screen if I was watching a movie. So I watch it. We've got a large screen TV. I watch things on my large screen TV. I don't need an extra subscription to anything. But yeah, I think they, you know, we do pay-per-view stuff, that kind of thing. The only thing I was really annoyed about was ESPN over here has an app on the iPad, but you can't access it unless you happen to have specific cable companies as your provider, and mine is not one of them. So I can't, there's certain things that, you know, if you're like a Comcast or a Time Warner or somebody, you can actually watch these things on the iPad, but I can't. And they don't even give you an option to do it any other way. It's just, okay, if you don't have these providers, too bad. Which is really bizarre. So
you're absolutely tied into your provider.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's just the way it works over here. Although I do have a choice. I mean, I could go with Verizon, their Fios service, if they offer, well, not for TV, only for internet. Sorry about that. They offer TV in various places, but our town continues to turn them down. So we have no option. The town makes a deal with the providers, and whatever it was that Verizon was offering them apparently wasn't enough.
Okay.
I think doesn't Time Warner and Comcast have their own Sky Go type applications, don't they?
I think they do, but I unfortunately I'm not one of, well, fortunately or unfortunately, however you look at it, I'm not one of their subscribers, so I haven't really looked into it. I'm not sure that any of them are any great shakes, you know. I can't really complain about Charter. They're, you know, they've been a really good service here, so I really can't complain about it. It's just that, you know, they don't offer any of the real frills that some of the other places offer.
Yeah, but the difference with this thing is you don't actually have to be a Sky customer. It's more of a Netflix, Love Film type thing. Whereas with these other services, you have to actually have an account with them anyway, and I think you have to pay a little bolt on as well so that you can have access to the application. But with this,
well, I'm just shocked at the price. £15 a month.
Ridiculous.
I mean, wow, that's a lot. And then you get to pay for the movies in addition. That's insane.
Well, not all of them. I mean, you get a nice selection of movies, and then there's additional ones, like newer ones, that you can also buy as well.
Yeah.
So you do get a fairly nice spread of films for that £15.
Yeah. It seems like an awful lot when Netflix is so much less expensive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just on the release window. That's the only thing. It's just newer.
Do you think, I mean, it's a side issue, really, but do you think that all these, I mean, obviously the technology is getting better and or easier, accessible, that's why we're doing it. But do you think these companies are saying, look, nobody's got any money, so they can't afford to go out? Because, you know, going out costs far more than £15 a month. You know, just going out for one drink in London costs £50. So they're saying, okay, if no one's going out, we can squeeze the few pennies they've got left by not going out and get them to buy something they don't need. Do you think this? To me, it seems a little bit. It's a strange. First of all, isn't it strange? In the middle of a recession, they're doing all these things to try and squeeze the extra pennies out of you. But maybe it's because of we're cutting back so much and going out. £15 is nothing in comparison to what we would have spent going out. So they think, you know what, people might think, well, it's only 15 rather than 200. So if we're going to have to stay in all the time, let's have a load of films to watch. I don't know. It just seemed to me a strange time to launch it, but that's my answer to why maybe they have.
Well, my take is that I just think the price is too high. With the competition, okay, the movies are slightly newer, but so what?
Well, yeah, unless you happen to be... Sorry, Therese.
Oh, I was just going to say, unless you happen to be somebody who wants to see it like right now, I mean, you can wait a little bit until it comes to Netflix. It's exactly, not the end of the world.
Exactly.
But that price,
you tried it, Carl. What's it like?
It's okay. It's nothing special. I mean, it's all web-based, obviously. So you click on the movie, it starts playing almost straight away, but then I've got a 50 meg package. So
I'm out of luck.
No, I don't know what the minimum is. Their site's not very informative. Because I was trying to find the iPad thing, it was very hard to find that. And then you had to go into comments and find out that people had been complaining that there's no iPad version and threatening to report them to the ASA, the Advertising Standards Agency. And now they've updated their site a bit, taking the pictures of the iPad and the iPhone and Android phones off. And they're saying, like, well, we hope to have it out soon.
But, I mean, I don't know if I told you the signing up for Sky Go was interesting. As previously, about 5 years ago, I was a Sky customer. It wouldn't let me sign up for Sky Go originally because it said that I've got a satellite subscription, so it's free. And I was like, yeah, I had a satellite subscription 5 years ago. And it wouldn't let me do it. So I actually phoned up their helpline, which I'm sure was premium rate, but it's bound to be. And I spoke to someone, and they said, yeah, but you are. And I said, no, I'm not. I said, look, when's the last time I gave you any money? And then she came back and goes, oh, yeah. And I said, what I want is they do like a monthly ticket thing, and it's got a funny name. I don't know what it's called. And she denied they even did it. And I was like, oh, look, I'm not, I don't really want to be rude to you, but I need to get this done because it's like 11 o'clock at night. And I need to go to bed, right? And I have to do this because basically I'm being paid to do this, and I wouldn't do it in a million years if someone wasn't paying for it and paying me to do it. Can you put me through to your supervisor? And eventually they, after being quite rude to me, put me through to supervisor, who then said, of course we do it. Oh, I don't know, the people they put in my team. She just sat there slagging off the people she worked with and then said, but the system's broken. It doesn't work. What I'm going to have to do is, can you set up a fictitious account?
Oh, no.
Yeah, if I must. And so I had to do that, set up, you know, it was all a bit dodgy. But that was the only way to get it working. And I had to give them a new email address because that was linked to the old one. And it were, the whole system was absolutely abysmal. And, you know, when you say it doesn't work, I was just like, what do you expect? I mean, from what I went through, it's like, if it did work, I would have probably been more surprised.
Well, someone else is trying something new. It's BBC Radio 2. Apparently, for the first time in 15 years, they've commissioned a completely new package of jingles. Now, Russ has the story on this.
Yeah, I listened to them. They're all very nice.
They're very nice, are they?
No, they've all been done by someone who's in a band that I like, a guy called Jem Godfrey. He's worked with I think he works for a company called Wise Buddha, who do jingles and all kinds of stuff, and they were the ones who got the contract to do the new jingles on Radio 2. And if you do a Google search for Earshot Creative Review and look at their post for July 2012, you can actually go in and hear all the jingles in isolation, and it's a really interesting thing to hear, because you can hear some of the beds, like the traffic news bed, all the music that's going on while what's her name is going through the traffic news, and also the pop master bed as well, which is it's quite interesting to hear something that's a really good piece of music, but it's not distracting at all. But yeah, I spent most of Monday listening to Radio 2, and that's the only time I've listened to Radio 2 in almost 5 years. Just to hear this jingles package.
I can't believe they've had the same jingles the last 15 years.
Yeah, if you compare the two packages, it's quite different. But they've still got the original, you know, the original hook. The original Radio 2 logo hook.
But that is the point, isn't it? I mean, it's audio, right? Okay, radio is audio. That's all it is. And it's like the opening credits to a soap opera or whatever. You've got to keep the fundamentals the same, because that's your advertising, isn't it? For instance, if you're radio, you don't necessarily concentrate on the same way as you do with TV, so you might be doing something else. And so these hooks have to be there because, for instance, a good example is what you just said with the traffic information. Sometimes I'm sort of zoning off when I'm driving along, right? And, I should actually be concentrating on the road, and maybe that's what I'm doing, so I'm not really listening to the radio. But, for instance, the traffic, I listen to 5 Live, which is, you know, another national radio station. But when the traffic comes in, and that thing that the car does and it turns the volume up really annoys me, so I turn that off. But I tune into it because of it. That's that noise. That's it. Oh, right, that's the traffic. And it doesn't matter what else is going on. It makes me listen to it. So these things are actually really, really important, these little jingle packages. And what's important is also that when they change them, they don't change them so dramatically that the reference is gone. And the pace of them are really important. I mean, it sounds, you know, oh, it's only jingles, what's that matter? But for a radio, which is 24 hours a day and going on and on and on, it's one of the most important things they do. It's their most important, trying to get you keyed into what's going on. So I'm sort of glad, and I can understand why they don't change them very often, but, you know, I'm glad they've done them, because 15 years is a long time for even the theme tune for a soap opera not to get jazzed up.
And you can still hear that it's Radio 2. So.
Yeah.
Now, I know you probably haven't heard these, Teresa, but I just want to ask, as our resident US representative this week, what do you think of our institution that is the BBC?
Oh, well, it seemed like every time we tuned in, it was hilarious. They were, I'm not sure if we tuned in at the same time every day or if they show this several times, but it always seemed like they were doing a show on the BBC television about newspapers. And it just floored me. I thought, this is the BBC. Why are they talking about what newspapers are saying? Aren't they supposed to be making their own headlines?
You were watching News 24 then?
I don't know what it was. It just said it was BBC. And we caught it in Ireland and when we were in England. And it was like three people, and they'd show a headline from one of the papers. And then they'd talk about it. And I thought, that is the weirdest thing I have ever seen in my life. Of course, I do have to say, I make it a religion to avoid television news here. I don't watch it unless there's some compelling reason, and I have yet to find a compelling reason to watch it. I can find everything I want on the internet, and I don't have to listen to them blather.
Well, we'll come to the news shows a little bit later. But yeah, we normally do that, so they read us what's in the papers, so we'd have to go and buy the papers.
It's just amazing. I was just astounded that I was sitting there kind of giggling, thinking, you have to get the newspapers out to do an entire show? Come on. What's wrong? What's wrong with this picture?
it sounds like you tuned into News 24 doing just a roundup of what's going to be coming out on the in the newspapers on that day. And it sounds like you were unlucky enough to catch it every single time you tuned in.
Yeah, it seems like it was very funny. It's only
about 5 minutes, I think. They just go through the top, some of the broadsheets and the tabloids, I think.
It was very funny. I was kind of getting a giggle out of that. Although I was talking to my sister who lives in New York City, and she said New York One does the same thing. So it's possible that there's, you know, maybe it's kind of city-centric, you know, so city-centric news, because I can't imagine, I just don't see CNN or MSNBC or Fox News doing something, you know, similar with headlines from around the country. It just doesn't seem to work.
Or outside the country.
Or outside the country. Well, God knows there's no outside the country. Jeez. There's enough news here without having to go outside the country.
Oh, yes. Sticking with the BBC, apparently BBC and Hulu are teaming up, and for the next, the fourth season, sorry, of the UK comedy The Thick of It. Now, we talked about this, I think it was last week, about The Thick of It coming back.
Yeah.
So this agreement is going to allow Hulu to stream all the subsequent, or previous, sorry, episodes of The Thick of It. So you Americans will get to see a kind of behind-the-scenes look at our political processes.
Yeah, it's a true story.
Yeah,
just prepare you there. It's all true.
Awesome. I'll have to look for it.
That also means you're going to get the fourth series probably as soon as we get it on Hulu and Hulu Plus. Now, we talked about this at length the other week, so I'm not sure if there's anything else we can add. But anything, Alex?
No, it's a good show, and let's show the Americans how to make good television.
I'm just hoping this is the start of a few more shows appearing in, you know, appearing both sides of the pond simultaneously. I mean, yes, we had to start with it with one of our shows, but maybe something that's made in the States will appear over here at the same time as it does over there.
There are things on Sky that appear the next day.
I don't have Sky. I'm talking
about
the
BBC.
A lot of the things that to do with Sky, though, it's because of the Murdoch Empire owns the companies on either side of the Atlantic. This is a tie-up, which is slightly different. This is a, you know, two separate entities agreeing basically to, you know, share the love, which is a good thing. I don't know why British and American TV has to be separated so much in the way it does. I mean, we make some good stuff, and you know, though it pains me, very occasionally they make some good stuff too. And it's just, I mean, there's lots of shows. It's, you know, it's like you sometimes your whole series behind, and if it's really popular, you know, you have to avoid watching Twitter. You have to do this, that, and the other, because otherwise, being 6 weeks behind or whatever we are here, you know, the whole thing's ruined. And it, you know, the world is a small place now, and I'm not quite sure. I mean, financially, they can't make any more money whether we get it 6 weeks after or not. Just the whole thing seems to be a bit daft, and if it can be sorted out, then why not? And this is, you know, two sensible companies coming together and saying, you know, I'm not sure what the historical reason for it is, but whatever it was, they're saying it's not relevant anymore. And if the others want to look stupid, I mean, this is a good thing. You know, if you're the first to do it and people like it, which I imagine they will on both sides of the Atlantic, then you've got a head start. So all that happened is the others will copy and claim it was their idea.
I'm just thinking, yeah, the Americans might need subtitles for Malcolm Tucker's rants.
I'm guessing it has more to do with, you know, royalties and the legalities of it. And they just, for some reason, they don't settle that ahead of time before doing, you know, just like they would. They've got everything in place in the U.S. They don't go to the U.K. and say, hey, we want to, you know, make sure that we're all settled here so that we can show it at the same time. No, they wait till they've actually made it. Then they go to the U.K. and say, okay, now we want to talk about this. So then 3 years later, you finally get the show. And the same thing going the other way, you know.
But, you know, it's not like production values, because, I mean, very honest, your production, oh, I don't want to be completely rude, but I'm going to be, but your production values in certain respects are a lot lower. I mean, I'm not saying it's trashy, but for instance, we could make a program that would need censorship for daytime TV in America, and we wouldn't deem that as needing censorship at all. But the other way around, there's very, I can't think of an American show that would even need consideration of censorship, because our censorship is a hell of a lot more lax than yours. So it sort of doesn't make sense to me why American shows can't just be, I mean, cut out the adverts and show them. You know, that's all we need to do.
Yeah, I think it's probably got more to do with royalties. Always follow the money. Always follow the money. It's always got something to do with money.
And the other thing is, I wish you guys wouldn't sell us shows that have already been cancelled.
Yeah, well, some of them are coming back.
Oh yes,
companies like Hulu and Netflix want to make new episodes of those series.
But what'd be interesting, some of these as an approach to this is like, if, like, for instance, British companies, if the first thing they really want to do is sell it to America to make a fortune, what they want, I suggest they do, is stick it on something like BBC 3, BBC 4, Channel 4 or whatever, you know, one of the lesser networks, ITV 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it goes to, simultaneously show it in America at the same time. So you can build up a following on both sides of the Atlantic. And then if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if it does work, you're then ready to go mainstream on both sides of the Atlantic at the same time. There's none of this needing to, you know, catch up with the first three seasons. Mm. I mean, let's face it, we've all got enough blooming TV channels that you could show everything that every country in the world ever makes on the day it's made. It's not like we're short of network space.
Well, we'll like to see how it's going to pan out and see how these shows come through. But one thing we're not going to see is a documentary from the BBC about last August's riots, apparently. A judge has banned it.
Well, it is called a how-to guide.
So the judge has banned the BBC and media from disclosing the... Does that mean us? which censorship order was made. So we can't mention the judge's name or details or any nature of the order. So that's nice. But since it was reported in The Guardian, I feel we can talk about it.
Yes.
I hope.
Well, have all the court dates come and gone for those people?
No, there's still loads of them waiting to go to court. That's probably what it's about.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I think you guys are way more strict about that kind of thing than we are here. In the U.S., it wouldn't be they'd be able to show that and everyone would have a fit if someone tried to, you know, to suppress it. But if I think over there, you guys can ban all kinds of stuff while the trial's taking place, right?
Yeah. But also, I mean, to be honest, it's grounds to have the most guilty person in the world freed if there's anything been done to prejudice the court case. I mean, in the States, you seem to be able to do whatever you want. But here, you know, any even inclination to prejudice in the court case and it's thrown out.
Well,
it's,
yeah.
I mean, individuals, you know, if, for instance, a news reader or someone on a panel show like this, but if it was on, you know, the BBC or something, they would be taken to court as an individual as well. They take it that seriously.
Well, over here, they figure that we're such a huge country that only 1% of the people will ever see something like that. So they'll be able to get an impartial jury. And they're pretty much right.
But again, we don't pick juries either. You know, you've got to have a seriously close relationship with an individual not to be able to stand in jury on them, so, or in judgment on them. So, you know, I mean, I can see why it's done and it will come out at some point. But the second question is, well, why is it taking so long?
Well, also, this documentary was slightly different in the way that it was created. It's a dramatisation based on testimony of people interviewed during the Guardian and London School of Economics research into this disorder. The way it was filmed is actors are actually hearing the people recorded telling their story and then instantly relating it back to the camera.
Awesome. Yeah, what can go wrong?
Yeah, that sounds slightly dodgy.
So that was the way the show was made. There was a word for it, and I can't for the life of me remember what they called it now.
Lawsuit.
Docudrama.
Yeah, it was something very similar to that. It wasn't the exact word they used, but yeah, you can basically say that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's what's caused a bit of the uproar, but we won't know now. I mean, they're saying it
because it's too soon.
Maybe. They're saying it might be shown later in the year as well.
Yeah. It'll be a Christmas special.
Oh, great.
Yeah, there you go. Well, let's write it for Christmas. Excellent.
What they want to do is write it into the Doctor Who Christmas special.
And then, and then the doctors come in and shoot all the rioters, right?
Yeah, it'll sonic screwdriver them into submission.
Exactly.
Now, the newsroom that Russ recommended the other week has caused a bit of a stir in the States. Apparently, Aaron Sorkin, the main writer of that, has sacked all his writing staff on the show.
I didn't recommend it. You did.
Did I?
Yeah. I think you did.
No.
I've never seen it.
Oh, yeah. Who the hell was it then? It was someone.
I get it.
Oh, wow.
It might have been Paul. I don't know. Go back to the episode. Watch it again. And listen to it again. Sorry.
Okay.
You'll find out.
But, yeah, apparently he's sacked all his writing stuff. Now, the show's about a news anchor who suddenly sees the light and thinks that the American news shows are pumping out too much rhetoric and just pandering to viewers. So he decides to tell the truth. So he says. Now, has anyone seen the show?
Oh, I saw it. God help me, I saw it. Well, I wasted an hour and, 20 minutes of time? Holy crap.
So you did that? Is it that bad?
You know what? It's beautifully filmed. It's beautifully edited. It's visually very nice. The actors, they're very good. The script, the script sucked pond water. It was so bad. Oh my goodness. It was just the most inane, ridiculous thing. I mean, if I was like 12 years old, I might have thought it was really great.
Uh-oh.
It's the high school version of this is what a newsroom should be. Oh, wow, isn't that cool? They're so wonderful. And, oh, they care so much. I'm like, oh, no, please. Please.
Well, it is basically a romanticized view of how the news should be.
It was bad. When I could have written that script, and that really tells you how bad it was, because I am not a writer. Holy moly. Yeah, it was the whole thing of where you first walk into the newsroom and the poor little blonde girl's having the fight with the boyfriend. You immediately knew he was going to be the bad guy. He was going to do everything wrong. And I might have been able to hang with most of it because the characters really did a good job of making themselves, if not likable in all instances, at least good to watch, except for their actual, the thing they chose as their big story was just stupid. I was just flabbergasted. I thought, you mean you can't even have writers that can make up a good, you know, emergency?
Oh, no, but that's the thing, isn't it? It's based on real events because it's set in the past.
Well, the problem was not that. It was the fact that, you know, they had this all this urgency to get this out, get this out, get this out. But for what? I mean, they almost, they were, you know, pretty much ready to say anything at all, but it wasn't going to save anybody's life. There was no reason that it had to be said then. You know, there was nothing compelling to get that. Oh, we have to get this out right this minute. Why? I mean, you know, basically they called the one guy, you know, who was supposed to be the jerk. Oh, look how bad he is because he doesn't want to do this right now. Well, there was no reason to do it right now. You could have gone back and found, you know, made sure that your sources were good and that you had the right information. No, 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 no. We have to get it out right now because this is important. And I couldn't figure out why. There was really no reason.
Okay. Alex, have you seen it?
No, but I have got two quick points. I did try and see it, but you told me to see it on Wednesday and it airs on Tuesdays here. Thanks, oh. Carl. But just two quick points. First of all, Teresa said that she's not a writer and she could have done better. Well, nor are any of the people that worked on this writers anymore. Yeah. And the second point is, I bet Carl's glad he recommended it now.
No, because I think it brings up some valid points. It does point to the fact that, okay, it's a very romanticised version of what a newsroom should be. But the whole point is, I think it does call into question the fact of how we currently report the news. And there is no need to get the news out with the second it appears. Well, apart from a headline, but there's no need to keep banging on about it.
No, but it's filling space, isn't it? I haven't seen the programme, right? But the news these days is not as it was in the old days. You've got 24-hour, you've got to fill it up with some old crap. And if you don't fill it up with some old crap, someone else will fill it up with some old crap and people will just switch over. So in that respect, I mean, news itself, the trouble with newsrooms these days, I think they're too busy trying to become the makers of news rather than the reporters of news. And I mean, it's irrelevant to this program because I've not seen it. But, you know, news, it's a different thing. I don't know, I can't remember who it was. And he did get lambasted for it and it just disappeared. But there was a newsreader that went on a campaign, I mean, a British newsreader and a proper bona fide one. They went on a campaign a few years ago to say that there should be a good news version or at least a section at the end which was not just fluffy cats but proper good news stories. But, you know, in reality, you know, that's what DIY SOS is for. That's what program is for. You know, news itself should be not necessarily bad news, but, you know, the news that matters to us tends to be, you know, things going wrong, because in general we assume that life carries on and we all survive and it's not so terrible, and we only need to really be reminded of the bad things. It's nice to have the fluffy kitten at the end, but in general that's what news is to us as human beings. I mean, gossip isn't, oh, did you hear that such and such did really well? That's not how human beings work. Gossip is when you want to be rude about someone or you want to tell someone that something bad has happened. So news really needs to reflect it, but I think news channels, 24-hour news, basically they should have, if a story breaks, then break it. Otherwise, don't try and be 24 hours. Just repeat the same program ad nauseum for 3 hours and then do an update. But, you know, that's the trouble to trying to create news when there isn't any, and that's the problem you get.
Well, our problem is it's like many of the papers. It's gone from news, and it's gone to opinion.
Oh yeah,
everyone's giving your opinion. You're getting that editor's or that show producer's opinion of the news, and a lot of the newspapers done the same. And that's why I stopped reading newspapers. So.
Well, there you go. There's the answer, dude. The British take right. Have opinion and base it basically on a comical value. You can have you can have 20 minutes at the top of every hour, and after that you get proper comedians standing up. Let's see how really good you are. Let's see what you can make up on the fly.
Excellent. And then,
that's what we want. 40 minutes of comical, what's the word they use now, satire on the news, and then 20 minutes of the real news.
Any thoughts, Russ?
Well, the first time I heard about the newsroom, it was a review on the Totally Rad Show, which is a Revision 3 podcast, and they liked it. And I thought, oh, I'll keep my eyes out for that. I'll keep my eyes peeled for that. And then somebody else didn't like it. I thought, oh, I'll still have a look at it. And then somebody else thought it was condescending and sort of anti technology and a bit just a bit crap. And I thought, well, I'll see if I can catch it. And now all the stuff I've heard today, I'm just not going to bother.
Well, you can catch the first show is on YouTube for free. That's how I saw it. Yes. So just go search for it. It's on there.
All right. Oh, excellent. Well, I'll have a look for that then. Yeah. But he's available for free.
He does have nice hair.
Which is something Alex longs for.
Rather than anything else.
Might give me some ideas then.
Yeah, but like I said, there's good points about the show, and it's well acted. I mean, the actors are very good, and that it's just, if the story had been better, oh Lord. But as they say, you know, what happens is even you can buy the most outrageous sci-fi stuff, but when they start doing something that you know about and it's wrong, it just throws everything off, and you just can't concentrate on the story anymore. You're just wanting to tear your hair out and say, why are you doing this?
Well, I still like it, so there. I'll be the lone voice.
Oh, you can keep it, mate. You can keep it.
Okay. Anyway, it seems like Pixar are again going for a sequel with Finding Nemo 2 in the works for 2016 release. The original director, Andrew Stanton, will return. There's no word on any actors that are also coming back for the film, though. But, you know, to me, Pixar used to be the bastion of originality. But why are they doing all these sequels now?
Disney. Sorry.
I can't understand this at all. Why would you make a sequel to a film that is a bit of a classic, isn't it?
Well, I keep thinking it is stupid fish. If he keeps getting lost, why don't they just...
Yeah. Also, it means that Nemo has managed to get himself stolen again, or he's run off, or his father has embarrassed him again.
Yeah,
perhaps his father gets nicked this time, and Nemo has to find what was his father's name?
I've not even seen it, so I couldn't tell you.
All right, it's a good film. The first one is a very good film. It's nice. But I think if this second one ends up being bad, then it's just going to ruin both films for me, I think.
Well, they seem to do this, you know, they get something that's really popular and then they say, well, it was really popular, so let's make a sequel. Mm. Or it was really popular back in the day, let's remake it. There's, you know, what about an original story? Apparently that, you know,
well,
that doesn't happen too often.
That's what Pixar used to stand for, but just recently, I'm not so sure.
Sorry, who owns Pixar now?
Well, it's Disney, but, you know.
Yeah, so just, and who wrote, well, who owned it when it was Finding Nemo? They were independent.
No, they still license all their stuff out to Disney. They've always been Disney films, haven't they?
Didn't Steve Jobs start Pixar?
Yeah.
He did.
I mean, maybe I've got the wrong end of the stick, but I always...
Not on his own, but...
Go
on, carry on.
That's because I always thought that at the time, Pixar were the very opposite of Disney, and everything they did was supposed to be the non-Disney way of doing things. And there was a big hoo-ha when Disney bought X a percentage of Pixar, because it was like, but they were supposed to be the anti-Disney, if you like, and then it's just going to be another company being absorbed by Disney and becoming Disney. I mean, maybe I got the wrong end of the stick, but I don't actually think I did for a change. That's how I remember it. And there was a big, big hoo-ha saying, well, why does Disney need to buy Pixar? You know, just because they're successful. If Disney want to do, you know, it's not like they do anything different. They just did it in a different way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not surprised that there's people out there that remember. I mean, to be honest, I mean, what's the difference? I listened to your show last week. What's the difference between remaking Finding Nemo? Because you've built a character and now you're going to base another story just on the fact of the character's name and his rough look, which is the same as they've done with Spider-Man and Batman. I mean, I take it, what's it called? What do they call it? A reboot?
Reboot.
Which is when you take a story back to the beginning and then you send it off in a different direction rather than having to continue a story.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they should do Finding Nemo 2, the alternative ending.
Not Nemo ends up in a sandwich or something.
Yeah. They don't find Nemo, right?
Oh, Nemo's
revenge. Losing Nemo.
Yeah, exactly. Nemo get lost. Yes. But that's what I'm saying. So I'm not surprised. It's because you've already got an established character. I mean, the thing is, what they want to do is, if forget about finding Nemo 2. I mean, hopefully they're not. I can't believe they'd be stupid enough to use the same name. Just use Nemo as a character and then move the story on, or completely forget about moving the story on. You have Nemo. He's a fish. There's an awful lot you can do with cartoon fish. You know, but if they carry the story on in some way, then it's just ridiculous. But they've got a set character. They've got a set look. They've got a set, I don't know what it is, kindness, sweetness, or whatever it is the characters had. And then you can just build a completely new story just using similar characters with a similar name. Hopefully that's the way they'll go. But don't make it a sequel, just make it a new story involving a similar character, as they do with the, as I call them, cartoon films. As my wife pointed out, they're comic strip films.
Well, I think that's probably what they're going to do. But either way, I'm not enthused, I'm afraid.
Nah, you're nearly as grumpy as me, you are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Grumpy old men. There you go.
Any views, Teresa?
What's that?
Any views on it?
Well, I'm getting tired of all the sequels of stuff. I mean, you know, and all the remakes of just... It's like nobody has any kind of original thoughts in their head at all. Or if they do, they're not allowed to make movies because Hollywood is afraid, oh, it won't make any money. And of course, I know that's important. You know, you have to make money, especially when you spend a ton of money to make a movie. But wow, it's just, there's so much unoriginal stuff. I mean, I keep thinking, well, we don't even have a Netflix account. I keep thinking I should get a Netflix account. And then I think, well, what is it that I really want to watch? Not too much, really. Maybe one or two movies a year that I'd like to pick up and watch. And so I just keep saying, well, one of these days I'll get it. One of these days I'll get it. It's pretty sad. Right. And then we watch TCM and watch the movies from the 1930s. And it's like, well, there's really no reason to go get a Netflix account.
You know, I'm really sad. I have a Netflix account and I look for the oldest, most classic films they've got on it. And then I watch those.
Set in your ways, Alex. Set in your ways.
Never.
Oh. The movie rating site Rotten Tomatoes has decided it's probably going to go with no more anonymous reviews after receiving some fairly scathing ones about, or the comments are fairly scathing ones for The Dark Knight Rises. The first time they said they've ever had to abandon the review section and to stop people commenting. So this just reminds me of the YouTube article we had a few weeks back. Hopefully that wasn't on one of the pilot shows.
No, that was that actually went out.
Okay.
Or did it? Yes, it did. Yes.
You can no longer leave just an anonymous comment. You have to put your name to it. And the hope is that will stop these trolls, as they're called, from making these obscene comments. Anyone got an opinion on that? I mean, surely that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing.
It was bound to happen. It was bound to happen. It happens with every forum. It doesn't matter. I've been on the internet since 1995, and I have to say with just about every forum that I've ever seen, it starts out with all the best intentions and people doing, you know, pretty reasonable stuff, and then it just kind of spirals out of control. I'm surprised that it's lasted this long, considering how passionate some people seem to be about making anonymous trolling comments.
But it's a space issue, isn't it? I mean, you set up a new review or whatever it happens to be, but you know, to get your numbers up, you have to allow trolling. You have to allow all these people, because they, once they can't do it on one site, they will move to another site. But as much as you might not like what they write, they're numbers, and numbers create popularity. Then popularity gets big enough, and once you're big enough, you can then cut them out, but they will then go off. So if you start something new, you've got to leave it open, because if you lock it down from the very beginning, you're not going to get past first base. There you go, an Americanism for you.
How long has Rotten Tomatoes been going now?
You're asking a question which I have no answer to.
They've been around a while.
Yeah. That's why I said I was surprised it's been this long before it's gotten out of control over something.
Yeah. But that says to me more that it hasn't been as popular as they'd hoped, and they've only reached this level of popularity now where they can afford to cut the trolls off.
I think I've only been there like once or twice ever, but I don't go to movies, so not a big deal.
I've never been there, I don't think.
Well, a lot of other sites aggregate the score from Rotten Tomatoes onto their own site, so it's the scoring system that goes backwards. So it starts off at 100% and it goes all the way down to 0% based on how good the movie is or how many poor reviews it's found.
I think it's pretty funny that they're stopping the bad comments on a site called Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, by doing it that way around, you only want negative comments. Because positive comments don't outweigh the negative comments.
No, they're saying offensive comments are the ones that's called.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, you're actually asking people to only write in if you didn't like it. Because if you did like it, then it does a positive outweigh a negative, or does it balance it off? From what you've just said, it just seems like if you start at 100% and then you give it a kicking down to whatever you feel is the natural level, you really are asking only for negative comment.
This is true.
Perhaps they should change the name to Fresh Tomatoes. are they gonna change the commenting system then?
I think they're going to just make it so that anonymous people, they're going to have to sign in. You're going to have to say who you are.
With your Facebook account.
So that they can, with your Facebook account. Probably. Well, you see, if it was with your Facebook account, then people are less inclined to leave bad comments when their Facebook account and with their name and a picture of them is attached. So perhaps that's the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Alternatively, they could start a fresh one, but it'll take them a while and they'd have to call it tomato ketchup.
Maybe. Then they can move on to puree.
Awesome.
And paste.
Anyway, this show and every other show on the network is brought to you by UK2.net. They've been the support of the network for over 3 years now, and we really couldn't exist without them. If you'd like to show your appreciation for us by showing them some appreciation, i.e. buying some stuff, if you just go to our britishtechnetwork.com, scroll down, find the UK2.net link, go through all their fantastic services they have on offer there, fill up your basket, and if you use any of these offer codes, you'll get some discounts. If you use British Tech DNS, you'll get free DNS for up to 2 years. If you use British Tech Domains, you'll get 20% off the domain registration. Most other companies only do 10%, but UK2 do 20%. British Tech VPN will get you 50% off your first month of VPN. British Tech Server will get you £50 off any gigabit server on any contract length. That's an online deal only, however. British Tech VPS will get you first month free when purchasing entry-level VPS as well. They really are a fantastic company, and they swallow up all our bandwidth, and our bandwidth is going up all the time. I don't know why, but it is. So if you really want to show some appreciation, just like I say, use those codes and our click-through link, and they'll hopefully keep supporting us. Wonderful chaps.
Yay.
So guys, we move on to the part of the show where we say, what have we been watching? Russ, you're up first.
Right. Well, I finally got around to it. I started watching Arrested Development, one of those cancelled shows. Mm-hmm. But it is coming back via Netflix, I think. It started a bit flat for me. I couldn't really get into it, but I've just finished the first season, I'm really enjoying it. I like it. It's good. Next, I've been watching. I watched the first series.
Where did you watch Arrested Development on Netflix?
I watched it on Netflix. Yeah, okay. Sorry. the next thing that I've had a look at this week is The Detectives, which is an old English TV show from the 90s with Jasper Carrot and Robert Powell. It's actually based on a sketch or a series of sketches, comedy sketches that Jasper Carrot did with Robert Powell because they're old golf partners, I think. It takes you back a bit. I think there's some shots of there's actually some shots of London before of certain parts of London before they were redone. But no, that's a hilarious series, and that's available on iTunes. I can't remember how much it is, but it is available on iTunes. Only the first series, unfortunately, because I mean the first series is one of the best, but the rest of them are very good. And last but not least, I've been watching the Totally Rad Show, as I do every week, but this week they have coverage of Comic-Con. So rather than read all of the blog posts and try and stay on top of things, I leave it to podcasters to tell me what I need to know about what information was presented at Comic-Con. And also they did a panel at Comic-Con like they do every year, and it's very entertaining. You can get that over at Revision 3.
Good stuff. Alex?
Okay, all right. I watched Thor. The 2000...
Really?
No? Yeah, I did watch Thor. You're trying to confuse me. I did definitely watch Thor.
I just can't imagine you watched it, that's all.
Someone said, do you want to do a media show? I thought, oh, I better watch something. Anyway, so I watched Thor. I don't know. Part of it was good. It's very disappointing that it's the first film I've ever seen with Natalie Portman when she keeps clothes on. That was a bit of a letdown. I mean, let's be honest. You've got to give an honest review.
She keeps her clothes on in Star Wars.
Oh, kidding.
So she keeps her clothes on in most things.
Yes. I've only ever seen her take her clothes off. I'm very selective in the film.
I don't know what site you go to.
Yes, anyway. What's his name? The guy that does it, is his name Chris Hemsworth?
That's it.
He's a surprisingly good actor, actually. I was quite pleased with him. The story was, it was quite a weak, feeble story, but then again, I'm not sure how you can do very much with Thor. What was interesting, though, it wasn't so much of it wasn't just CGI, over story. They did make an attempt of making a story, and it wasn't just smashing this and smashing that and smashing the other. You had the two very separate parts. You had the sort of the fantasy part when he was up in wherever he comes from,
Asgard,
somewhere in the middle of the space, so it was supposed to be real as such, but it was, but that was very fantastical and all the rest of it. But when he came down to Earth, it was very earthly. So I quite liked the fact that they didn't try and mix the two things until the very end, when there was a little bit of, punching and fighting, which is what Thor is quite famous for. Mm-hmm. But, that was quite good. The story wasn't all that, but, for a couple of hours of, losing yourself in a film that you didn't have to think too much of, it was fine. It wasn't great, but it was fine. I then watched. What did I then watch?
He moved on to his next victim.
Yeah, well, this really is a victim. I watched Super 8 last night. Now, I don't even know how good or bad this film is, because I thought I was watching something else.
Oh, it can't be that good.
I put it on. I don't know. I was going to watch The Tree of Life, I think it was, with Brad Pitt, and I was going to watch it with my younger son, and we were going to sit there and we were going to bond and we were going to do all this. But I put it on the wrong channel.
Oh, that's an old man mistake, dude.
And I was watching this thinking, come on, Brad Pitt, my son knows who you are. Can you please turn up? There's all these kids, and one of them must grow up to be Brad Pitt. And then no one seemed to be growing up, and they seemed to be making this really, really crappy film. And I was thinking, right. It's not going very well, is it? And then he comes in and out and goes, is Brad Pitt turned up? And I go, no, yeah, I'm sure he'll be here soon. And then an alien turned up, and I was thinking, you know what, there's something wrong with this film. And then I pressed the button to see what I was watching, and it turned out I was watching a film called Super 8. So I had to watch to the end, but it started getting a bit bloody and a bit gory. Not terrible, because it's a 12-year-old film, but my little one's only 9. And I was just like, I don't know where this is going. I have no idea where this is going. And they started shooting things, and things kept running around, and this alien was controlling things by... They never bothered explaining how the alien was actually controlling things. It just did. And then this alien, I thought, hold on a minute, it's a spider. Then it turned out to be an alien, and then it decided it was going to eat everyone. And then the little boy said, I understand that you're lonely. Why don't you go home? And then this thing that didn't appear to understand anything, because it just looked like a big praying mantis, put him on the ground and went, oop, and then he bounded off, jumped in his spaceship and disappeared. So, I mean, I know that sounds like a really brief appraisal of the film, but that is about...
Sounds a bit rushed.
That is about as much as I understood in the entire film. Bearing in mind, I thought I was watching a Brad Pitt movie about father's son's bonding.
Right. Okay.
But if you want to watch a film and write a review and explain it to me, I'd be very grateful. Right, and finally, something that I do watch purposely, right, is Outnumbered. It's a BBC show. It's about, I'd say, it's not a dysfunctional family, because if it is, my family are even more dysfunctional. It's just two parents with three kids, two boys and a girl, and it's just life. And the beauty of this program, it is scripted, it is a comedy, but it's not scripted to the nth degree. The characters are given rough lines, rough ideas, and then they're told to act it out as if they're a family. And there's something very fluid and very natural about it. And there's certain things you think most shows would have reshot that because the take wasn't perfect, but it's that slightly not perfectness that makes it such a wonderful program. And all the characters are likable, and they're all unlikable. That's a terrible word, but they're all dislikable at other times. They're all, the kids are all very sweet, and other times you want to throttle them. You know, it brings you in as if you're part of the family and you're their parent, and you look at it and you think, first of all, you think they're for the grace of God, go I, and then you realise, hold on a minute, I am going through that. We're all going through that. And it's all, it sort of makes you feel better. It makes you think, you know what? These guys are trying. The kids are driving them nuts. The kids are also very cute. The kids are also very clever. They're also very horrible. And every parent has been there. Maybe not quite so middle class and quite so lucky in some of the things they seem to get away with. But in general, they're just normal situations played out in a very normal way with a very good bunch of actors, and it just makes you feel better about your own efforts as a parent, you know. And so any parent, just watch it, because okay, it's a lovely, charming piece of comedy.
Now Thor and Super 8 are on Sky's new Now TV service, so
there you go.
And Outnumbered is the first series is on Netflix, so
yeah,
but in the UK anyway.
That means I might have to get Netflix and see if I can find it, huh?
I've got a feeling, I have heard people talk about it who are over stateside, so I'm pretty sure it's one of those programs that the BBC have sold to America. So you might just be able to get it on things like Netflix, the US.
Okay.
And Teresa, what have you been watching?
Oh, well, I watched The Newsroom, and so to get... I tend to like old movies, really old movies, like from the 1930s. So the other things I watched were a couple of old Barbara Stanwyck movies from 1931 and 32 that TCM was showing the other night, one called Shop Worn and one called 10 Cents a Dance, because Barbara Stanwyck was an outstanding actress. And these were pre-code movies, so a little racier than the later 1930s movies were. But yeah, I like old movies. I'm an old movie buff. I like old jazz. I'm an old jazz buff. And it just, I'm not really, I don't know all the names and all that kind of thing, but I just enjoy watching that kind of thing. Most stuff I don't have anything on right now that I'm watching. That is, I think we're kind of in the summer lull for a lot of stuff. So I don't know if there'll be more coming in the fall. We'll see.
Well, I'm sure there will be, and about 2 dozen shows that they'll cancel straight away. So.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So you saw them on a movie TV show channel over there.
Yeah, Turner Classic Movies is a big one here for showing old films.
Yeah, we have that here as well. So it's on Sky and on Virgin, and I think probably everything else. It's one of the film channel, movie channels that you get thrown in with the bundle if you buy any other movie channel.
Right. Yeah.
So I've been watching Drop the Dead Donkey, which I think Russ did recommend last week.
I did. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yes. It was. I remember going back and watching that the first time around. But I can only watch it on the iPad because it's not on the... I can't get it on the screen because they ban you from switching it from the iPad to the screen. No AirPlay.
Well,
not fair. I also went back... I have no idea why they do that. I also went back and started watching The West Wing because I was told it was good in the day and I never saw it. And my mate has the DVDs and he lent them to me, which I know is probably illegal, but there you go.
Well, as long as you're not stealing them, you're allowed to borrow your friend's DVD.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we'll see. There's some draconian laws, so we'll see.
Is The West Wing any good?
It's the dialogue. It's, you know, snappy and witty and it's good fun. And I don't know how accurate it is, but it's, again, like The Newsroom, but also Aaron Sorkin, of course. Mm. So it's an ideal situation of how the presence and presidency should be run, but you know.
At least in his view.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sure many Tea Party members, if there are any listening, wouldn't agree with that, but there you go. Okay, so, guys, where can we get hold of you? Russ?
You can get me on Twitter at sfdrummer, and you can find something else at sfdrummer.com.
Let's see. Alex?
Get me Alex G. Fox on Twitter. Will be very kind.
And also the photo show, of course.
Yeah, you could try there if you like.
Every Friday, 2 o'clock, which I can't make anymore.
And damn good it is, too. I really
it
like
is.
Is it?
It's awesome. Oh, it's excellent.
I'm ready and waiting with my squeaky toy every week.
Yeah, so if you don't have to understand what
Brits can't do podcasts.
To understand what that means, you have to watch the show.
You've got to watch the photo show.
Teresa, where can we hold of you?
Oh, I suppose on Twitter at Teresa, TeresaHummel. And that has a link to my blog if you are interested in reading the occasional stuff I post. And I think that would be good.
And all your Instagram posters.
Yeah, well, that's actually comes up in my Twitter feed. And
that's good. My name's Carl Madden. You can get me on Twitter at Claw0101 or also on the Worlds Apart show, which is released the same time as this media show, normally on a Monday. So there you go, guys. That's the show this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Stay safe and see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.